Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you are listening to All Ball, All Basketball, All the Time. Quick note that as we get closer and closer to the NBA bubble, we'll be having more and more of these on balls. We even have some emergency on balls after like the first Lakers-Clipper game. So thanks for downloading. Tell a friend. I don't think you'll be disappointed. You can go back through our archives. Last week we had Mark Turgeon on. He was awesome. This week we're going to focus on two players allegedly set to join college basketball sometime. Amani Bates, who by most people's estimation is one of the best talents to ever play high school basketball. He's maybe 2 years, maybe a year out from playing in college. He said he doesn't want to play in college. He committed to Michigan State. And then McCourt Maker, who was a top 100 recruit and just committed to an HBCU and get a chance to play potentially for a historically black college university. But the problem is he might not actually play for that college university. What does it all mean? We'll get to that upcoming. I want to give you a couple thoughts here on the NBA. I've heard comments. Anthony Davis said, hey, we're better than ever. We're healthy. We should be the favorite. Comes down to who's healthy and who wants it more, and we want it bad, right? That's basically what he said. Here's the issue. They're not going to have Avery Bradley. They might not have Dwight Howard. And though I like the J.R. Smith addition, J.R. Smith could have been added anyway, probably would have been added anyway, the issue is their success directly recent and their dominance in the league. They became the best team in the league over the month of February. Do you know who else was playing great in February? You're right, Avery Bradley. They need him. He was a great on-ball defender. He could make shots and play without the basketball. Now, J.R. Smith, we think, can make shots. He's not the same type of defender, but a decent, solid defensive player. He's just not the ball handler that Avery Bradley is. It hurts them. He's not a, there's a reason J.R. Smith was on the street and a reason Avery Bradley was a starter, right? There's the two different players. So Bradley was coming into his own, him staying home. But the bigger thing is we do this thing in life, and maybe I do it because I have some narcissistic tendencies where you look at things from only your perspective. So Anthony Davis is just looking at it from his perspective. His perspective is we're healthy. LeBron's rested now. He was carrying a huge load. When he's right, when he's fresh, he's the best player in the league. That's Anthony Davis, who's played with him. And Anthony Davis probably thinks, I was a little worn down. Now I'm fresh. The problem with it is, so are the Clippers. And if you look at the Clippers and their issues, it was with cohesion. Well, now they get an additional training camp. They get more time around each other. Then they get, you know, their early playoff games. They'll have more time and games together so that any chemistry issues they previously had playing with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, this is like another season and another offseason. And Kawhi struggled to stay healthy. You would think that all the time away, all the rehab, work on his body, Kawhi Leonard should be back to prime Kawhi Leonard, which is closer to his athletic prime than LeBron James. So while I do think that the Lakers are rested, fresh, and if they can stay healthy, have a great chance, I think the Clippers benefit equally, and maybe even more so if Lou Williams gets on the plane and goes to Orlando and they have all their players, which I think is going to happen. So I get the thought on the Lakers. I don't really understand what's happening in Brooklyn. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, legit surgery. He's not going to go. Kyrie's not going to. Like, nobody wants to go. But I think that part of it is this is about leadership. Rap. You know, LeBron leads, wants to go. All but one guy goes. Kyrie Irving questions the league and whether they should do it. Kevin Durant doesn't want to play even though he's healthy. And nobody wants to go for Brooklyn. So, look, do I think the Clippers are favorites? I still have questions about the Clippers outside of Kawhi, you know, their ability to take and make big shots in the playoffs. They don't seem to have as many guys. But then I have the same questions about the Lakers. Anthony Davis never done anything in the playoffs. JR has, but is that's the guy you're counting on, right? Like, we have our questions. Rondo hasn't done it in years. I love Kuz, and I think the biggest question for the Lakers is this. If Kyle Kuzma is right physically, is right mentally, they could be a much better team because he had yet to have really much of an impact or a positive impact on the season when it stopped. It was everybody but Kuzma kind of playing it at their top level. If Kuz is back, I would say the Lakers get back to being a favorite. But it's a big if, especially considering they just lack the depth of guards and guys to create shots for others. I look at the Bucks, and it's going to be very telling for that team. You know, and the thing about the Bucks, which is fascinating to me, Chris Middleton says he didn't touch a ball for 3 months. I don't believe him, and if it's true, I think that's not good news. Now you could, that doesn't mean you're not working out, but the development of your ball skills and getting it back in a month in ramp up time, whoo, that is an uphill climb. I still think it's the Clippers. I still think it's the Lakers. I'm intrigued to see what Houston looks like, because when you don't have, remember, you don't have home games, but you also don't have road games, and they could be a matchup problem, most specifically for the Lakers, who don't have the number of perimeter players to guard them and could struggle with small ball if Houston could get hot. And I'm intrigued to see what Milwaukee looks like, because you have a team that has not won big and they had a great home court. Them losing that home court seems like the most, like the Lakers lose their home court and they were going to play the Clippers and would be like a home game even when they played the Clippers. But the Bucks, because of their youth, because of the energy in Milwaukee, the desire to keep Giannis and the desire to win a championship for the first time since Kareem was there, I think the Bucks lose the most in losing their home court, and we'll see if Chris Middleton really is that rusty. Let's get you to our guest for the day. Brian Snow works for 24/7 Sports. He's a basketball recruiting analyst. He knows everything, the insides and outs of the game from these guys when they're, you know, 14, 15 years old. He's awesome for this particular topic. He joins us now on the All Ball Podcast. B, Amani Bates, how good?
He's really damn good. And, you know, I wrote about this, Doug. Kind of one of the things that really separates him from other guys who have gotten the best since LeBron title, guys like O.J. Mayo, Tyreek Evans, is he's not this, like, overgrown, physically developed 16-year-old. He's actually got a lot of room for growth. And then he's also not this just freak athlete who you're hoping his skills catch up. He's super skilled, super smart, has an incredible work ethic. So he combines good physical tools with incredible intelligence, incredible work ethic, and skills that are off the charts. And at 6'8", with, you know, ball skills on the wing, I mean, he just does things that are so advanced for his age. It's really impressive.
Okay, so why Michigan State in your mind? Why did he choose Michigan State?
I mean, quite honestly, they were recruiting him. I mean, it's really that simple. His dad was getting all sorts of frustrated with the fact that his son wasn't being recruited. He was universally considered the best high school prospect in this sport, and schools just weren't recruiting him.
Because they all thought he'd go G League Select, or overseas, or what?
They just thought he wasn't going to college.
Right.
And Amani himself has said he doesn't want to go to college. He wants to go right to the NBA. Now, I don't there's a whole lot that goes into that that's out of his control, obviously, including the NBA CBA. And as of right now, really only one person wants to change that rule. And it, granted, it's the most important person, it's Adam Silver. But, you know, there's not as nearly the momentum to change the one-and-done rule as there was maybe 6 months ago.
Why do you think that is? Because of the G League Select thing?
No, I think it's you talk to scouts and front office people, they don't want to be in high school gyms.
Correct.
They want that year of college development where, one, they learn what you're like against other good and developed players, and, two, they learn what you're like when you're away from home. Do you lose your mind and act a fool? Do you show responsibility? You know, how do you react to everyday regimented things like got to be in the weight room? How do you show up to practice? How do you show up to work? Do you show maturity? How do you respect your coaches? That's all very important to the NBA evaluation that you simply can't get in high school. So it gives them more certainty on what they're drafting.
Why? Listen. Again, all your points I agree with, and I know that they're not just your points. They're points of people that you know in the business that you've talked to. Why, though, this is weird. We've gotten to this place, and maybe I have to be careful about living in the media realm and in the social media realm, but what you're saying is what I know to be my thoughts, but also the thoughts of lots of powerful NBA basketball people, as well as the NBA PA, and said, like, those guys don't want more young guys in the league. Like, they just they don't. It doesn't make the league better. You need that year. You probably need 2 or 3 years, to be totally honest with you. But anyway, why, though, do so many in our position, and your position in the media is different than my position, right? You're much more entrenched. But why are so many writers under the belief that the one and done is a bad thing, and that they believe everybody wants to change it, when that's not – why the disconnect, I guess, is my question.
It's tough for me to speak for other people. I do think in some respect they can see, and they're correct in saying Adam Silver is the guy championing this, and he's the guy with the most power. But at the end of the day, he does work for, what is it, 30 owners, 32 owners, whatever. But he genuinely believes he wants, because he believes just on principle that the players are the product and they should be allowed to come to the NBA right away. So he's viewing it from that perspective. Scouts are viewing it from the we need to know what we're getting perspective.
Right.
And then GMs are looking at it from the, well, our best value is when a guy's on a rookie deal. At a one and done, you know, his first year, we get some value out of him. But if he's coming right out of high school, that's 2 years of his rookie deal where we're not getting the value we're supposed to be getting, which makes team building hard. And so they look at it from a different perspective. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the NBA PA, they look at it from the perspective of we don't want to lose our jobs. Our job, you know, as the NBA PA, we want to protect who's in the Players Association now. I think writers kind of miss that. And there is the belief, and Doug, I know you disagree, but I have this belief that players should be compensated in college. So it's like they're getting the raw end of the deal. And that plays mind games on yourself into thinking that this makes it all better by having them be able to go to the NBA.
Right,
and everyone should want that.
Okay, you bring up a great point. Let's kind of go through it. Like the GM, I actually think the GMs, they all get fired when they drafted high school kids, because here's what happens: you draft a high school kid, and you draft a guy in the first round, and the owner's like, "We'll play him." Right? Like, okay, well, if we play him, we're not going to win. No, play him. Let's see what we got. So you play him, and you can't win. You can't win with an 18, 19-year-old kid. You just can't. No one does, right? And the first GM and the first head coach always get fired. Always, always, always. Go back and look. They all get fired within 2 or 3 years of drafting those guys early in their life. Even the ones that became superstars, because they played them before they were really ready to help you win. And so your team is worse because of it. And people aren't really into owners aren't really into the process of, wait a second, he's going to be good eventually. You're playing him now. You're losing. Why are you losing now? Okay, so for the GM, if you draft a kid out of high school, you play in the first, I think the first year is a total wash, total waste of time. I mean, the most ready guy, I guess, was Kobe, and they got to the playoffs and he was bad, but that's like the best, and Kobe's a one in a million, whereas Kevin Garnett and other stars weren't actually, you know, LeBron, I guess, would be the other one. Those are two of the greatest players in the history of the sport, right? And so that's the first thing. So GMs, the first year is a waste. The second year is eh. And after that, now all of a sudden you start to get into the do we know what we have thing. I think the one of the big things that we're missing, and this is where I actually do think players are compensated, okay? Because I think they're compensated not just with getting into college they couldn't get into, but while they're there. But they're also marketed. And I think what Adam Silver misses, and what like his big swing and misses, and it's better for the league when they spend a year or two in college, I mean, frankly, the longer, because all we do as broadcasters is promote these guys as something greater than, and the Zion Williamson effect is the perfect example. Zion benefited from being at Duke in terms of getting in shape, becoming a better player, but the biggest benefit was to him as in marketing. he became a superstar because you align him as a YouTube star with the biggest brand and the cleanest. Like, again, I'm not telling you it actually is clean, and the current investigation into his recruiting may expose the ugly underbelly, but it's you combine those two superpowers. And you put him, he only played a couple NCAA tournament games. He didn't play a full season, but look what it did to the marketing of him. Same thing for Kevin Durant. It's better for the league when the player's a little bit mature, but also when they have a legit following once they, from just a year of playing in those big made for TV events and in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. And again, like, I actually think it benefits the NBA. I certainly think it benefits college basketball to have these guys. I know some fans get into like, well, I don't get to know them. And I'm like, you know what? You still like watching your team win more than you like getting to know the guy. So, like, I don't see where anyone loses in the current situation. Now, like, on principle, if you just ask me on principle, like, if I was writing rules of what I think is right, I think they should have the right to go to the NBA. However, if it's collectively bargained that they can't, I see no problem with that either, because that's how the industry works, through collective bargaining. But, I mean, there's just so much to it, especially in regards to Amani, just to bring it back to that for a second. Like, you know, is he going to move up to 2021 and, you know, try to play? He would have to play 2 years at Michigan State because of the age, because he's actually correct age. He's not old. You know, 2022, does he wait and see if the rule gets changed? I mean, there's just so much with Amani and the NBA and what is best for him and his marketing that it's going to be very unique to watch, to see how the situation progresses over the next 2 years.
It's going to be fascinating to see. And I think what's interesting is going to be how Michigan State recruits around him, right? Because the words, how he really feels, will his dad and will his commitment help Michigan State build some dream recruiting class, much like Oklahoma State did around Cade Cunningham? Granted, no one at his level, but they've done very, very well. And Cade ultimately showed up. Obviously, it helps that his brother was on staff. You know, or will it actually be a detriment where no one actually believes he's coming, but they have to save a spot for him over the next 2 years in case he does decide to come and play? And it actually ends up being a detriment to them, because everyone knows at the end of the day, he's going to figure out a way to get around the rule and not actually play in college. All right, let me get to the news of the moment, which is I think this is interesting. McCourt Maker ends up committing to Howard. Now, Howard's a HBCU, historically black college. It's interesting on a multitude of levels. He not only committed, but, you know, picked him ahead of UCLA and Memphis and Kentucky. He's a kid that's well traveled, right? Going, you know, he went to Orange Lutheran and then he kind of bounced around. He's a top 50 kid. First, how good is McCourt Maker?
You know, he's really good. He's unique in that he's 6'10", but he doesn't really always play like a big man. He tries to play on the wing a little bit more than I would like. But he's talented. He's 6'10". He can dribble, pass, and shoot. He's not a great athlete. He's an okay athlete, but he's got good length, and you know he's skilled. He knows how to play. So he's a really talented player that is still working to put it all together. But he's a really talented player.
How big is this for the sport that he picked an HBCU? Kenny Blakeney, who, but if anybody has paid attention, Howard was terrible last year in Kenny's first year. Now, I'm not saying it's an easy job. Any of those jobs, those are tough jobs. They won 3 games against Division I opponents. 3. And he's going there. How big is this for the sport, in your mind, and for recruiting?
You know, I don't think it's as big as some people do, I'll be honest, just because I hesitate to think that a lot of kids are going to follow this path. Now, maybe they will. And if they do that, that is a big game changer. But when you look at McCurr's situation, it's just so unique. I mean, his guardian, Ed Smith, who was Thon Maker's guardian, and I don't think I'm breaking any news here, a lot of schools just aren't going to deal with the man. I mean, they're just not. So, like, I know Kentucky was on his list. Was Kentucky really recruiting him? Honestly, I don't think so. Did UCLA, I've known Mick Cronin for 15 years. Like, is that kid going to play for Mick Cronin? I don't know how that's going to work. Mm-hmm. But maybe UCLA really want it. I'm not saying they don't. So by him going to Howard, it first of all, I think he'll definitely be eligible at Howard, which is a big part of this. But you still have the kid still wants to go to the NBA. Ed still wants him to get paid. He did the same thing with Thon. Thon committed to a school or was planning to commit to a school and then ultimately went to the NBA. I think in Ed's mind, the kid's still going to go to the NBA, but this is kind of the backup plan. So there's this part of me that wonders, is this actually going to hurt the movement
yes.
of HBCUs getting top kids if he backs out at the last minute because he still is in the NBA draft process? So I don't know. I still think there's so much left to it in terms of, you know, what kids are going to seriously consider that option, what aren't. McCurmaker's not this kid who, like, a lot of other kids hang out with and look up to. He's not, you know, he's not a trailblazer in that regard. He's never been Mr. Popular on the circuit and stuff like that. So I don't know if he's the guy that really would start a movement. But if it does, it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, there's no question about that.
I think people forget that in the 70s, and again, this is secondhand information my dad, my late father told me, which he's like, look, in the 1970s, there was a movement in basketball to the best black players to go play in the Ivy League. James Brown, who, of course, is a broadcaster for CBS, was a great player at Harvard, and they had other great players at Harvard. That movement kind of obviously slowly died off once when the NCAA tournament expanded and the Ivy League, you know, clearly chose to not use its resources towards sports. That thing died off kind of quickly. But he's like, there was 5 years there where between, you know, Columbia recruiting New York City kids and Harvard and Penn, really, you know, they all had some of the top, if they didn't remember really top 100, but some of the top kids from the East Coast would go there. I guess the big one would be Mikey Williams, and he's only a freshman, going to be a sophomore. He's old, which means he could be draft eligible, or he could go to the G League select team after his junior year and then potentially go to the NBA. Like, Mikey Williams is the one that changes the things, right?
Yeah, if Mikey does it, that's a little bit different. You know, he's friends with a lot of kids. A lot of kids really like Mikey. You know, they know about him. They look up to him. He's not this, like, random kid who's kind of been in Canada and then been at every other high school and is, you know, transferred 5 different times who no one really got to know. So, you know, that's where it's like a kid like Mikey Williams, it's a whole different beast than McCurmaker. Also, like, Mikey, you know, like, he's theoretically at least not already declared for the NBA draft and hadn't made those intentions known at the beginning. You know, that's the thing with McCurr is, like, he's been telling people, and Ed Smith's been telling people, like, you know, he's going to the NBA. Because technically, and without getting into the minutia of it, like, if he were a quote-unquote American-born, he wouldn't be draft eligible because he's not a year removed from high school. But they applied based on him being Canadian, I guess, or he's from Australia. It's a whole big thing where they basically, like they did with Thonmaker, where they found a loophole to get him draft eligible a year earlier. And they did that with McCurr as well. So it's just every situation is different. Mikey is a kid, and it's not just limited to a kid like Mikey Williams, but he's mentioned it publicly, so it's easy to say his name. But a kid like Mikey Williams just has a whole different impact than a kid like McCurmaker.
Last thing. The Duke thing with Zion Williamson, like, I still, like, okay, so we've had, first, like, Oklahoma State got just crushed with the NCAA probation or whatever, taking them out of the tournament for the 1 year they have Cade Cunningham. And the people I talked to, like, look, do they have real grounds for appeal? Sure. But the idea that the NCAA, who just put these new kind of policies into effect, is going to go like, nah, we'll change our mind, doesn't seem likely. So we haven't, they had one level one violation, whereas Kansas is 5. And then you have the Duke thing. What does this end up looking like? In your opinion, you've been around this like your entire professional life. What do you think this ends up looking like for college basketball if, in fact, we have a season this year?
That's a really good question. First, you know, And we got the I forget which acronym or whatever that the NCAA uses for their new independent review board. But, you know, so we've never seen how quickly or how not quickly that's going to work. So would Kansas's case even be resolved this year? I don't know. The thing with Kansas that is tricky is the NCAA kind of went over TJ Gasnolas, who was an Adidas representative, went over his transcript of his court report and basically said, well, we like this sentence, but we don't like this one. We think he was lying here. But, oh, he was this sentence, yeah, that sounds like the truth. We don't like this one. And kind of picked and choose. I don't know how that's really going to hold up. It seems like if you're going to take testimony as fact, you have to take the entire testimony as fact, and they really didn't do that. So I'll be really interested on that front just to see how that goes. The Duke thing, I don't think that's ever going to see the light of day. I don't think Zion's going to have to testify. I don't think anyone's going to have to talk about his time at Duke. So I don't think that'll ever see the light of day. So I think Duke will be fine in that regard. Now, whether they did or didn't do that, I personally do not know. But, you know, like, I just don't think it'll ever be a matter of public record. So
right.
The NCAA really won't have anything to go on. So if we have a season, I would think Duke's fine. Kansas, we have no idea because we don't know how quickly the board's going to work. Then the Oklahoma State thing, it was like they were trying to make this, like, statement, and it just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense at all, right? I mean, you have to take so many leaps, right? Well, Mike Boynton was on staff when this took place. Yeah, but he was like the third assistant. Well, he kept the assistant in question. Okay, but he's not alleged to have known or have any sort of influence on it, and they didn't actually get the it doesn't seem to hold up. But I agree with you. Once you can't say we have this independent board and we're going to empower them. You empower them, and then the first big decision they make, say, "Nah, that was too. We're going to, you know, we think it was too tough." Like that's, I think Oklahoma State gets caught up in really, really bad timing. I really think that's what ends up happening.
It would seem that way. What I can't figure out is it's all been about like head coach control, and I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but the head coach at the time was Brad
Underwood, and nothing's happened to him, nor will anything happen.
Like brought up, it's like, well, what? Why is Mike Boynton's name brought up and not Brad Underwood? That's the point I can't like even like grasp in my mind. And it's not that I think or want Brad to get in trouble because I, you know, just genuinely as a human being, I don't feel that way. But it's like, why is Mike paying for someone else's sin?
Well, and
when
he wasn't
in charge,
right? And why is Oklahoma State? I guess why is Oklahoma State paying for somebody else's sins? But yeah, make more. Why is Mike? Yeah, it's very confusing. It's very confusing, and I'm willing to believe that with the level of investigation that they were able to have, that if Underwood didn't really know about all that was going on, right? And I think it's generally believed that, you know, obviously the exception is Bill Self because he's on the phone with these guys, but unless there's phone calls with Brad Underwood, like I'm willing to believe that Brad Underwood's like, get it done. Let me know what I need to do. Get it done, right? That's what you tell a guy who's out there recruiting. Get it done, and let me know if he's not privy to those conversations. But I'm with you. Then why is Mike Boynton, who's like two steps removed from it, now suffering the consequences from something that he had no idea about that actually existed? That doesn't make sense to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I just fail to find the like. I'm more concerned with the process than the actual result. And this was a flawed process.
Yes.
Because if you have a flawed process, fundamentally, you're going to get to a flawed result.
Okay, last thing, and then we both got to run, okay? Let's say the Warriors have the first pick. If you're going to pick one guy in this NBA draft, who is it?
For me, I'm always trying to pick the best player because I'm not worried about position fit as much and, you know, like my current roster. To me, if you get the best player, ultimately that's going to help you win more games.
Agreed.
Because in the NBA, you can make trades and everything. And I personally think the best player is Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. James Wiseman being a center and not shooting threes, I can't take him number one. LaMelo Ball, he has a lot of hype from places that benefit him to get hype. And, like, they just gloss over the fact that he shot, like, 22% from three and had, like, one good game. So I can't get with that either. Not to mention, he's never dominated at any level, not in Australia, not in high school. Like, that's going to be a tough sell for me. So I'm going with Anthony Edwards.
He's a beast. The only thing people can pick apart was he didn't shoot well at Georgia, which was not a good team, but plenty of guys have not shot well in their first year in college basketball. And if you watch them shoot, they'll become good shooters. Great stuff, man. Brian, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us your perspective.
Thanks, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, look, my general takeaway is this. I think when players commit to playing in college, it's a good thing. And I am, like anybody, I've always wondered, like, are there going to be, you know, five of the top high school basketball players in the country that get together and say, let's go play for Howard. You know, let's go play for Hampton. Let's go play for Norfolk State. Now, the issue becomes, one, do you have not just the coaching, because Blakeney's plenty good enough, but the resources. Do you have the resources to support them? So their bodies change, their games change. Like, really, as far as crowds and that stuff does become overrated. And is McKerr-Maker a big enough name to demand ESPN and Fox, CBS, put him on TV? Probably not. But a Mikey Williams would. And that's the point where the tipping point. Until then, it's all talk. Personally, I think it's awesome. And I think it would be awesome if guys went to the Ivy League like they used to in the 1970s. Because the truth is, at least by my estimation, the greatest way to elevate yourself, your family, your race, is through education and the people that you're around. And some of the champions of black businesses go to Morehouse, go to Hampton, go to Norfolk State. But to this point, we have not seen any sort of influx. And the question becomes, do some of these NBA players or some alumni or just some very successful black businessmen decide, we're going to invest in these programs, get them the best facilities and strength coaches and practice facilities? Because when you do, then you can really be at the same starting gate as the rest of Division I college basketball or Division I college football. Until then, you got a massive uphill climb, and you're asking a player to make a leap of faith and an amount of sacrifice that many aren't willing to make, even if only for 6 months in a one-and-done or for several years. But I think it could be a great thing. I think the Ivy League would be a great thing. Because the truth is that the facilities are generally overrated. Nobody became a great player because of facilities. they didn't. You became a great player because you had natural-born talent, you got in a gym, you worked in your game, you had good coaching, you worked in your game some more, and you played in games, and you worked and got better. Watch film, and you can do that anywhere. But we do all get caught up in chasing the shiny stuff. I do. And sometimes the shiny stuff is an arena or a practice facility or the best shoes and the best gear and TV. But games on TV, that doesn't determine whether or not you play in the NBA. They find you wherever you are. So we'll see if McKerr-Maker or if Mikey Williams, if that changes the landscape of things. It could. And if it does, we're all better because of it. But if not, it's just a one-off story. And McKerr-Maker was simply chasing headlines and he ends up declaring for the NBA, going to the G League, and we forget about that this ever happened, and there is no movement or push towards HBCUs. But it does ask the question, why hasn't this happened already, and when is it legitimately going to become a thing? Not yet, but we're close. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.